Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good morning to our attendees. I'd like to welcome all of you to the ISO 37001 2016 Systemic Approach to Prevention, Detection, and Management of Bribery webinar. My name is Joseph Krolikowski. I am the ABMS Program Manager for Perry Johnson Registrars. Our topics for today, we're going to go over what the ISO 37001 standard is and a little bit of where it came from. We're going to go over the bribery definition that appears in ISO 37001. We're going to explore a little bit on why this standard was developed, as well as its alignment to Annex SL. And from there, we're going to go into a little bit of the content of ISO 37001 and try to break down what is provided as far as the provisions and controls. We'll have some comments on the benefits of certification, a couple of concluding remarks, and then your questions. So ISO 37001 is the first ISO published standard on bribery. And its full title is Anti-Bribery Management Systems, or ABMS, Requirements with Guidance for Use. And it does have, as we'll learn a little bit later in the presentation, a built-in guidance section for users. Now, that guidance section is not mandatory. It is guidance, as the title would imply. Now, the term bribery, actually, depending on the country that you're operating in, the term bribery has different legal definitions. But nevertheless, because this is an ISO published standard, it was thought that it would be beneficial to develop a definition of bribery to appear within the standard itself. And here is that definition. So bribery is defined as offering, promising, giving, accepting, or soliciting of an undue advantage of any value. Now that can be financial or non-financial, whether directly or indirectly, and irrespective of locations, in violation of applicable law, as an inducement or a reward for a person acting or refraining from acting in relation to the performance of that person's duties. So they drill this down right to the person. And of course, it's recognized that this is a certification for organizations, obviously. But if you look at the definition for organization, it is explained that organizations are made up of people. And so by this definition being written in the manner that it is directed obviously at individuals within an organization. Now, why have a international anti-bribery management standard? Well, as I'm sure we can all agree, bribery, it's an ugly practice. It undermines trustworthiness in organizations, in industries, even entire regions. And to be suspected of involvement in bribery, this can affect an organization's ability to quote or even be considered for quoting or bidding on future business. So if we don't have a mutually agreed to standard for combating bribery, what hope does an organization have of shaking their reputation? Now, the efforts that revolve around anti-bribery go back a long ways, actually. And there's been a lot of efforts made, both governmental and non-governmental, to have some guidelines in place for this. Now, the oldest of these is the FCPA, the Federal Corrupt Practices Act. That goes back to 1977. Transparency International, has been around since 1993. They publish a report called the Consumer Perception Index, the CPI, and that is actually a key factor that PJR uses in determining the required audit time for an organization for ISO 37001. Many of you remember the Enron fiasco that led to the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002. The UK had a similar anti-bribery act in 2010, and then a full standard actually followed in the UK, British Standard 10500, and that goes back to 2011. Now, the 37001 development process, like every other ISO published standard, it was assigned to a committee, Project Committee 278 to be exact. Their work began in February 2014, and it followed the usual path for the development of an ISO standard, beginning with a committee draft in the fall of 2014, and then finally, the official standard was published on October 13th, 2016. Now, the 37001 standard, at the time that it was published, just like every other ISO published standard from the past 7 years, it was rooted in Annex SL. Now, Annex SL was first published back in 2012, and this was outputted by a committee of the ISO called the Joint Technical Coordination Group. And what Annex SL is all about, it's a 10-section blueprint for writing ISO standards. Now, you might ask, why is that important? Well, the idea is that if you as an organization have already, particularly within the last 4 to 5 years, if you have deployed any of the other standards I've got listed here, you can very easily add ISO 37001 to your certification portfolio. So, for example, if you already have an ISO 9001:2015 quality management system, you can layer ISO 37001 on top of it and already have a lot of the things in place that you need for ISO 37001. This was, of course, the whole idea in having a common structure and having common verbiage and so forth. So, as a couple of examples, things that you would already have from having an existing management system from another ISO standard. You'll already have things in place for management review. You'll already have things in place for internal audit, for corrective action, even for competency. The programs that you've implemented for those requirements can be brought to bear in implementing ISO 37001. Now, the ISO 37001 standard, at the heart of what the standard is all about, it focuses on three key areas for a system for anti-bribery. And these can be thought of as prevention, detection, and response. And we're going to go through those now and kind of point out some key causal items. Now, the bulk of the requirements that were written focus on prevention. And obviously, that is the ideal state. We want to be able to prevent incidents of bribery before they occur. So, we begin with Section 4.5, where they talk about bribery risk assessments. Now, these are supposed to be done on a regular basis, and they're supposed to be a look across. You can think of these as reviewing what's going on within the organization and trying to identify current and potential bribery risks. Now, records of these are supposed to be maintained similar to management review requirements. Every 37001 certified company is supposed to have an anti-bribery policy. Now, you may, if you're an ISO 9001 certified company, you may already have a quality policy. A very similar idea here. Now, this is supposed to come from the management of the organization, and it's intended to make very clear to the members of the organization that management takes bribery control seriously. And the bribery policy is supposed to, again, be a light for management on this issue and also raise awareness of the existence of the program. Anti-bribery compliance function is discussed in section 5.3.2. Now, this is typically going to be a team of people, and they are going to be tasked with multiple responsibilities relative to the ABMS. So this is going to include developing the system itself, making sure it's deployed, making sure that the effectiveness of the system is reported. Now, this function has to be staffed with parties that are independent and also empowered. They have to be in a position to do something about a bribery incident when it's discovered. So it has to include at least some members of upper management that are empowered to respond appropriately. Employment awareness and training is covered in section 7.2, and this is actually one of the more extensive and prescriptive of the requirements. It's a very long list of things that you're required to do within an organization that has an ABMS program. So they talk about things like screening requirements prior to hiring personnel, having whistleblower protections, having reviews on performance bonuses, and providing bribery training mandatory for all personnel within the organization. Due diligence is discussed in section 8.2. And 8.2, of course, gets into transactions involving customer, business involving customers. And this requirement comes right out of the risk assessments mentioned in section 4.5. And it says that you need to have appropriate investigations performed prior to transactions, prior to projects, etc., if a bribery risk is identified. So they, again, they want you to be very careful about these things, kind of look before you leap, if you will. In 8.3 and 8.4, there's discussion on both financial and non-financial controls. Now, there's a lot of guidance on what they mean by financial and non-financial controls in Annex A, but understand that these are wide-ranging requirements. And depending on the organization, this is going to touch on a lot of different areas and a lot of different types of controls. There could be, for example, tiered payment rights. One party might be empowered to approve expenditures in one part of the organization, and one group of folks might have expenditure rights for another area. Separation of duties, limiting the use of cash, requiring dual sign-offs on contracts or triple sign-offs on contracts, restricting who has access to quotation rights and other price-sensitive information. So a lot of potential controls that can be put in place, again, both financial and non-financial. There's in section 8.5, there is a set of clauses under 8.5 that relate to what are called controlled organizations. Now, that's a very key term. It's an important term to understand, and it relates to any organization that you have control over that is outside of the immediate organization. So this could be, for example, a satellite organization or a partner company, things like that. And it's defined as if you have control over the management of that organization. So any controlled organizations or business associates, if you're 37001 certified, you have to flow down the ABMS controls to those external providers. You need to extend your system to those controlled organizations. In section 8.7, there is discussion on gifts, on hospitality and donations and so forth. Again, Annex A provides a lot of guidance on this issue, and it also makes kind of an interesting point in that gifts and hospitality don't have to be expressly forbidden. They just have to be monitored. They just have to be controlled. You know, there's nothing that says you can't make a donation to a local school district. You just have to have some due diligence on that process and show that there was no bribery associated with that. Now, getting into detection controls, we're going to see some of the same items that we saw under prevention, beginning with bribery risk assessment and anti-bribery compliance function. These are definitely viewed as both prevention and detection. In terms of detection, probably the most important item that's mentioned in the standard is raising concerns. Now, this is discussed in section 8.9. And the idea here is that the personnel within an organization are supposed to feel empowered and unafraid to come forward and report actual or perceived incidents of bribery. Now, there's things that are discussed in Section 8.9, mandatory anonymity for whistleblowers, treating reported incidents in a confidential manner, and protecting against retaliation for whistleblowers, creating an environment where the whistleblower feels safe coming forward and sharing what they have seen or what they think they've seen. Because again, the idea is you can investigate these matters and come to the conclusion that there was no bribery. And that's an acceptable outcome if the investigation was done correctly. And that actually comes under response, which is, of course, 8.10, investigating and dealing with bribery. Now, this is a fairly extensive section, and obviously it gets into response protocol, and it states a variety of things. Number one, obviously there has to be full cooperation with the folks that are doing the investigation. And again, the investigators have to be empowered. Now, the results of their investigation have to be shared with the compliance function, and again, treated confidential in a confidential matter, unless required by law otherwise. And as I mentioned earlier, again, the result can be no problem, no incident of bribery, and as long as it's all done by the book and on the record, that's not going to be an issue on audit day. But again, to kind of put all of this together, the whistleblower has to feel safe and protected in raising the issue, and the party doing the investigation has to be transparent, and it has to be on the record. Now, 37,001 does have a rather long list of required procedures. Now, some of these we've looked at already in terms of requirements. You have to have a procedure for your hiring practices, for how you raise awareness of the anti-bribery program, for control of both controlled organizations and business associates, and how are you going to control business associates that are not controlled by the organization, where you don't have control over their top management. You're also required to have a procedure for the commitments by your business associates not controlled by the organization, controlling gifts, hospitality, and donations, a defined procedure for how you will report bribery or raise concerns, and how you will investigate those concerns. And finally, internal audit has to have a procedure as well. Now, as a reminder, the definition for procedure from ISO 9000:2015 indicates that it is a specified way to carry out an activity or a process. Now, there's a lot of ways that you can render a procedure, but it does have to be documented and written down. But again, lots of ways to develop procedures to show how a process is going to work. Now, as I've alluded to several times already, there is a guidance annex within ISO 37001. Annex A is, I'm recalling, it's almost as long as the standard itself. And every single one of the specific requirements within an ABMS, due diligence, financial controls, and so forth, is explained thoroughly in Annex A. And there's a lot of helpful examples for organizations that are trying to establish their ABMS program. Again, when you read through the standard, definitely review Annex A, and recognize that what's in Annex A is not mandatory to the extent that non-conformances can get written against it if you don't do everything that's listed therein. It's supposed to help the users of the standard. Now, our assessment process for ISO 37001 is layered, and there's a lot of audit techniques that are brought to bear. One of the more important pieces of the audit is the review of documentation. The auditors are going to be reviewing, obviously, procedures, but also contracts. We're going to look at contractual terms and conditions. We're going to get into, is there a standard contractual T&C document? Do these vary from contract to contract and so forth? We're going to interview a wide variety of employees at different levels of the organization about their role in the organization and ensuring that they're aware of the anti-bribery protocols and policies. Now, if you have, for example, field operations, a number of our ABMS clients are in construction. Often it's necessary for us to go to the construction yards and interview some of the employees for the same reason, just to make sure that they're aware of the program and what it's all about. Also, the auditor is going to review a variety of resources to determine if you've been involved in an incident of bribery. They're going to look at websites, they're going to look at legal filings, just try to get their arms around has there been any recent incidents that they need to be aware of. Now, there's obviously a number of benefits to pursuing certification to ISO 37001. It provides some assurance to outside stakeholders that the organization is taking business ethics seriously, and they're working on promoting a culture of honesty and trustworthiness. Especially if you are working in a region, in an industry that has a reputation for bribery and corruption, this can help to separate folks that are reliable from other folks. It can lead to overall cost reductions. It can help to prevent conflict of interest. And if you are found to have an incident or an alleged incident of bribery, it can be used as a resource of information to help make government investigations, for example, go a little more smoothly. ISO 37001 is an intriguing standard, and we feel it has the potential to make a real difference in the world of commerce. We do hope that the points of our presentation today will help you consider the benefits of ISO 37001. Now, as of November 2019, PJR is the only USA headquartered certification body to achieve ANAB accreditation for ISO 37001 2016. So our ISO 37001 certificates bear the ANAB seal. I'd like to invite you to tune in for one of our other webinars. We have a presentation entitled "The Interaction of Processes and Its Importance to a Successful Audit." This is an exploration of the crucial topic of processes and how to understand them. We also have a presentation devoted to non-applicable clauses and what can and cannot be excused in an audit assessment. And we've got a wide variety of other webinars on a wide variety of other topics, everything from ISO 9001 2015, ITF 16949, even Stage 1 auditing. A lot of content. The best way for you to keep informed of the latest news is to opt in, and to do that, you simply need to visit our website at www.pjr.com. Go to the bottom of the homepage, you'll find a place you can input your email address and click subscribe, and you'll be automatically opted in for news updates, upcoming webinar information, and other points of interest. I do thank you all for your time today. I'm going to go ahead and unlock the question portion of the dashboard and see if we have any questions today. Okay, it would appear everyone is all set. I hope everyone has a great day. Thank you so much.